Create Art Podcast, KDOI Rebroadcast, Novel as Art, interview with Michael Finley. Hello, friend. This is Timothy Kim O'Brien, your head instigator for Create Art Podcast, where I bring my 20 plus years of experience in the arts and education world to help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. Now, how do I do this? Well, I use interviews, conversations, commentary, projects, all of those tools to help you out. Now, with the rebroadcast, this is from my old podcast, KDOI, which stands for Kimo's Den of Iniquity. I had that going on for about three seasons, and the first season was all about the interviews. So I wanted to make sure that this didn't stay just on my external hard drive. I want to make sure that you had access to it. In today's interview, talking with a good friend of mine, Mike Finley, who I've known since, since my time at Southern Illinois in Carbondale. And he's a writer, actor, armchair philosopher, and poet. This episode, we're talking about the novel as art and his beginnings and where he goes with his art and where he gets his inspiration. So stay tuned. I will see you on the other side. All right, and welcome back. This is Kimo's Den of Iniquity. Hi, I'm your host, Timothy Kim O'Brien. And folks, today we have a very, very special guest here on the podcast. This person has worked with us multiple times in previous reboots of this podcast. Fantastic voice actor, fantastic playwright, fantastic author and actor. I'd like to introduce to you folks here today, Mike Finley. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Kimo. Hi, everybody.
Great. So just for transparency's sake again here, Mike and I have known each other since our good college days back at good old SIU. That takes us back, 97, 98 time frame, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Okay. Gosh. Yeah, we're working on 20 years here, guy.
We are. Holy shit.
You know, isn't that amazing? You have put up with me for 20 years. You do deserve a medal for that.
I'm sure. I just want to be put in the will.
Oh, you're definitely in the will as the person that's going to be taking care of the funeral costs.
Okay. Well, I could just throw your ass in the ditch.
There you go. Most people want to do that anyways. Good deal. Well, like I said, I've known Mike for about 20 years now. And, you know, when I first met you, Mike, you were a actor, acting student at SIU. Mm-hmm. And then I moved on. You're a poet as well. Did some writing, a playwright. So can you talk a little bit to me about, our past, kind of bring everybody up to speed. When you first discovered you were kind of an artist up until, your most recent work here of what you've been doing.
Oh, well.
I know. Well, we only have an hour here, so.
Okay, well, I'll give you the abbreviated version.
Yeah, Reader's Digest version.
As you said, I've been an actor for a long time. Well, I started performing when I was about four. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, in schools and in church. And, and as I got older, outside, some professional stuff. The first show I ever saw that said that where I learned that this is what I want to do, that I want to be an artist, I saw A Christmas Carol at the Goodman Theater when I was about 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And the special effects were so amazing. The performances were so amazing. They had a guy walk through a wall. Now, granted, 4 years old, you're thinking that this is all magic. But I saw that and I said, that's what I want to do. I want to be whatever they're doing. That's what I want to do.
You wanted to walk through walls.
I did. Because it was awesome. It was brilliant. And, I studied. you know, when I got into high school, I was did shows all the time, much to the dismay of my other grades, but I didn't care. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I studied, and you know, I was reading Shakespeare, when I was 16, and every show I did confirmed that this is what I wanted to do. And when I went to SIU, I got 2 degrees there, one in theater performance and one in creative writing. And I got into writing. I'd always been scribbling things here and there, but I started reading my poetry at open mics and stuff like that. It took me a while to gain some confidence in that, but I did. And I really started enjoying doing my own stuff. It was much more satisfying. I could actually say what I wanted to say and not be the mouthpiece for another writer, which is amazing. I mean, you know what that's like. And the feeling of having an entire room of people just wrapped around you, and they're all listening to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And then if you're good, they applaud. Or if you're bad, and some places like this in Chicago, they throw beer at you.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been doing. The past few years, I've had a kid, been married, I've had, several life gets in the way of things.
Absolutely it does.
I'm working on a whole bunch of things right now. And I'm still writing poetry, and I'm working on a play and working on a few novels.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, that's
pretty much Mike Finley in a nutshell there. He's a powerhouse, of multi-talents. Now, Mike, did you, let's kind of, break this down for, the folks here that are wanting to, dip their toe in the waters of being an artist, of creating art and all that good stuff. So, talk about the first play you wrote. Did that come easy to you? Did that come hard to you? Talk about the first play, first poem, one of the first that you did. How difficult was that for you?
Well, first poem. Got to remember what that was. Actually, I found it easy. Probably because, I had been studying it for so long. The thing is about art is that you have to be willing to risk. Absolutely. You have to risk making a fool out of yourself. I mean, that's what theater is about, isn't it? Because you never know how it's going to be received. So you have to be confident about it. And you have to be confident that if you're working with collaborators, other artists, other writers, other actors, you have to be confident that they'll have your back. And the thing about just writing on your own is, you have to be confident in yourself. In the first poem I wrote, I think it was, I was 16. I was in an English writing class in Lake Park High School. And my teacher, Mr. Blaukamp, a big giant of a man, sent me back this poem that I wrote. And he said, you're very talented and you need to, I would suggest that you keep going with this. And here are a list of other authors you might like, other poets you might like. The first real play that I wrote, I didn't mean to write it at all. It was, I had been taking a class at SIU I can't remember what the professor's name was, but he read some of my papers and he suggested that I should take his playwriting class. And so I did, I didn't think too much of it. And then, I wrote a few sketches and he said, this is okay. I think we should get you to work on something for the showcase. Yeah, you know, which I forget what that was called, but it took place in the lab theater. I was listening to a lot of jazz at the time, a lot of John Coltrane.
Oh, John Coltrane, nice.
Yeah, and I kind of cringed at the idea of it, but I titled the play "O Love Supreme." Mm-hmm. I was probably on something when I did that, but hey, that seemed to be well received. And the director, of course, of that show did a fabulous job. I just kept writing. And then gradually, the writing took over. I was spending more time writing than I was, you know, being an actor. That was it, you know, I just preferred doing my own stuff. I haven't really looked back since.
And that's a perfect thing to you know, control your own stuff, to write your own things, and be in control of that, because then you can talk to the audience one-on-one. Even if you're collaborating with other people, you're still the main force behind it. You still are having that conversation one-on-one with the audience. And you can say exactly what you want to say to them, whatever mm-hmm. is in your heart to say, or whatever is inspiring you to say. I'd like to kind of move to, a lot of people, they have their day jobs and they're like, oh my God, you know, do I have the time for this art stuff? I'm working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. I've got kids. Right. You've got a full-time job. You've got a lovely child. Who will be ruling the world one day. You already know this. I already know this. They're going to be ruling the world with my children, naturally, hopefully.
Yes.
But can you talk to me? We'll see. We'll try. You know, they allowed us to be parents, so we'll see what happens to the
this
world
is
after
true.
We're
this,
long gone.
This is true.
But can you kind of speak to, you know, folks on how you balance all that out? Because, right here today in 2017, you know, I know for me, my art is not paying the bills. But I do my art because I have to do it. B, I enjoy doing it. And C, I've got something to say to the world. How about for you? How do you approach that?
Well, you know, my situation is different because I don't have twins. Again, my kid is 12, and so she knows when it's time for daddy to work on his stuff, and she'll do her homework, and then or she'll read or whatever, or she'll work on her own project. She's kind of an artist herself. And balancing your time, what I do is that I dedicate certain hours of the day or of the week where I say, okay, I'm going to be doing this. And I have to cancel out all distractions. Like I can't listen to music. You know, I can't have, you know, the door open. You know, it's just me in front of the screen or with the piece of paper on the table. Sometimes I work 50 plus hours a week. But when I come home, I sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write a poem. And I don't get up until it's done. And that might take me 45 minutes or might take me 3 hours. But I don't get up until it's finished. Now, with a longer work, like a play, or a novel, you have to know what you're going to say. But you also need to give yourself room for the characters to develop in their own way. Because during the process, the author, without sounding too weird or mystical?
You're allowed to sound weird and mystical on here. It's okay.
Okay, cool. The author basically just becomes the vehicle. I think at a certain time, the characters become so developed in their own way that they they just know what they're going to do. They know what they're going to say. And you're just the person hitting the keyboard.
Gotcha. Okay.
But the thing is that you have to put your butt in the chair. And from my experience with other creative people, that's the biggest problem for them, you know. And it's a problem for me, but it's just like having another job. And even though you're not getting paid for it, mm-hmm. It's not going to pay the mortgage.
Sure.
It's like anything else that's important to you, you know. Mm-hmm. And you have to put in the time for it, and you have to be disciplined. Whether it be a painting. I mean, you're a painter. You know what it takes, what kind of time it takes.
Oh yeah.
You know. I think it's the same thing. You know, with you have a favorite sports team or whatever. All right, you're going to set time to watch and support your team. You know, you're going to set some time to go out with your friends and watch a movie or whatever. It's about picking the time to do it. And, you know, I mean, everybody's different and everybody's got their own process, but it's important to have a process and to be willing to, dedicate it, dedicate your time to it, dedicate your life to it. Maybe not in, you know, some sort of, you know, extremist sort of way, but if it's what you want to do, then there is nothing stopping you from doing it.
Fantastic. I totally agree with you on that. Now, when you complete a piece, say a poem, or, you know, you're working on a poem for 45 minutes to 4 hours, or you're working on a novel, or you're working on a play, or, you know, you're working on a painting, a little sketch, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Once you complete that, what does that do for you? I know this is a huge question. It's a huge question. But, you know, what sense of accomplishment, what do you get out of it personally?
I look at it and I hope it's not awful. I say, wow, look at what I did. You know, I'm working on a novel right now. I hit 50,000 words last night.
Nice.
Now, if you're not a writer, that probably doesn't sound like a lot. It is. It's labor. Mm-hmm. But when you look at something that you created, and even if no one else has seen it yet, it is a sense of accomplishment, you know, that you've done the work and you've said something, and that there's something there that didn't exist before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is a big question, Kimo, but it's a but yeah, you've done something that no one else has done, and no one else will do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure everybody's got a book or a story in them.
Right.
Yeah, but everybody's got their own book and their own story to tell. Mm-hmm. And their work will never be yours, and your work will never be theirs. It is purely your own, mm-hmm. that you have, you know, pulled out of the ether. You know, that you have been graced with the time and hopefully the talent in order to accomplish it. So yeah, it's a deep kinship, mm-hmm. with the piece. And I don't really know how else to describe it. It's almost like, you know, having another kid.
There you go. There you go.
You know? Yeah.
And, you know, I know you probably listen to a lot of interviews with artists and musicians. Sure. And whatnot.
Sure.
I know I do. And, well, hell, I interview artists and musicians and whatnot. But one of the things that I always hear is, you know, they treat whatever creation they have like a kid. You know, people say, hey, what's the greatest thing you've ever done? Well, they're all my kids. They're all my projects. You know, right. I can't pick necessarily a top one, maybe a top 10, but You know, right. I can't pick the top one thing that I've done that is that's the greatest thing, because, you know, for me, that greatest thing is yet to be done. You know, there's always correct. More work to do.
Yeah. I mean, the next time you sit down to at your desk or whatever, mm-hmm. it's going to be a new, it's going to be something new. It's going to be something completely different. Mm-hmm. And you just have to see it through.
Now, something I want to go back on a little bit when you were talking about creating your art and what that does for you. Do you feel compelled to do it? And I know we haven't gotten to the Satanic Seven questions yet. I know mm-hmm. you're on pins and needles waiting for those questions. And this is a question outside of those. Do you feel compelled to do your art?
Yeah. So it's
you have no choice. You have to do this.
It's a need, yeah. It's like breathing. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine a life not doing it.
Gotcha.
No, yeah. I think about it all the time. And when I'm not working on something, I wish I were working on something. Mm-hmm. You know, I take notes constantly. You know, I'll be at my desk at work, and you know, and I've got nothing going on or whatever, and I'm just scribbling down notes or. Or am I at lunch and I'm reading? You know, I'm constantly studying. Maybe, you know, it may not be something, you know, as lofty as Shakespeare or whatever. I mean, I just read The Gunslinger, mm-hmm. you know, by Stephen King, you know, and that's, you know, it's not Hemingway. You know, so.
Not but Hemingway, but just as thick, just as dense.
Okay, sure. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine a life not doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter and I, we're members of the art gallery, the main art gallery downtown mm-hmm. here in Nashville. We're always going there. You know, she grew up there basically. You know, all the staff have seen us there for 10 years. You know, for every new exhibit, we come back every, you know, a few times a month just to see it.
Sure.
Because art does art, you know, I don't want to sound cliche, but I guess I'm going to anyway. It humanizes us. You know, you can see or read what someone has created, and in this day and age, especially with the internet and everything, you know, people tend to I guess turn themselves into cartoonish versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they're making a comment about, you know, whatever president is on or whatever topic is currently trending or whatever. And I see people write these horrible things, and I just say that can't be you. You can't possibly be who you are in real life, because who you are online or at work, you know, when you're wearing the mask that you have to when you're being professional, that's not really you. That's not real life. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you see something that someone has created or read or you experience it, they are showing you who they are. And sometimes it's not a pretty picture, and sometimes it's a beautiful picture. And then you look at what you've done, and sometimes that's not a pretty picture either. Mm-hmm. And you see yourself just laid out there on the page. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, you know. I think as an artist, you have to live your real life. You can't. You don't have time to be some other version of yourself, because there is no other version of yourself. You are who you are in that moment. And that's the other thing about being an artist. You have to live in the moment, especially when you're in the act, especially when you're working. You have to.
Because you never know when that next piece of inspiration is going to hit you across the face.
Precisely.
And you need to get it out. You need to get it documented, at least frozen in time, so that way you can pick it up later and utilize it in a different piece.
Precisely, yes.
I've done it a couple of times. I got a few pieces out there.
Yeah.
So speaking about having a few pieces out there, let's talk about what you currently have out there, where people can find it at, and what you're working on now. If I remember right, you've got a book of poetry hanging out there someplace?
Yes, I do. It's on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's called Cecilia's Blues and Other Poems. Mm-hmm. You can pick it up on Amazon. It's under my name, mm-hmm. Michael Finley, Michael G. Finley. Pick it up, buy it, buy a whole bunch of it. Give it to your friends, neighbors, people you don't like.
It's a great stocking stuffer, folks. I've given it to many people that I don't like.
And I've published in a smattering of different journals and magazines throughout the years. Right now I'm working on I've been working on a novel years ago, and it was about a politician takes over America, mm-hmm. and the aftermath of what happens. Little did I realize that current events would confirm what I was fearing in the book. But so I had to put that away for a while because it just got a little too weird even for me, and I'm into some pretty weird shit. Right. But I'm also working on a detective novel that takes place here in Nashville, but set far in the future, mm-hmm. And it kind of explores the different things that are going on here now. You know, with the booming economy and the 100+ people a day moving here, and what that does to different neighborhoods, you know, gentrification, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And something else that I've been working on, it's a series of, it started off as sci-fi erotica.
Okay, sci-fi erotica.
And I'll tell you how I got to that point. I heard about this trend in, self-publishing of, dinosaur erotica. It was these girls writing stories about women having sex with dinosaurs. I said, what a strange and weird concept this is. And people were buying it. I said, well, gosh, people would just buy anything. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said, well, you should try to write something like that. I said, no, you're crazy. Says, no, you should try to write something like that and see if it sells. Well, I started writing this story about this guy who time travels through, goes through time and space by having sex. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I'm really horrible at writing sex scenes, and that's a limitation that I'm more than aware of. And it's turned into an adventure series. Mm-hmm. About this guy, his name is Malcolm St. Michel, and his various people in his life that are thrown together with him, and they, I've never been a big fan of adventure fiction, but I finally started writing it, and it just kind of took off for me, and I'm four novels in, and my plan is to have at least five first drafts, and then start publishing them piece by piece.
Okay, so you're four novels in, going to knock out that fifth one here hopefully very soon, and then you're going to publish it. Now, how are you going to publish that? Because that's a pretty daunting task, to publish work like that. How are you going to do that?
Well, there are several routes. I mean, you could do the traditional, submit it to somebody, submit it to a company, and hopefully they'll accept it. But with self-publishing nowadays, it's become a rather booming industry in and of itself. It can be expensive, because if you're not a competent editor or you're afraid of editing your own work, you would need to hire someone to do that. You have to design your own cover. You have to be prepared to do the publicity for it. So it can be a daunting task. But if you're willing to do it, and I certainly am, mm-hmm. That's all part of the. It's just part. of the creative process. It's and if you want to put yourself out there, you have to be willing to take that risk. You know.
Yeah, you were mentioning that risk at the beginning of this interview, and then, you know, doing the self-publishing is another version of that risk. It's a financial risk because you never know if it's going to sell or whatnot.
Correct.
You know, just having that feeling of looking at your bookshelf, and I'm looking at my bookshelf right now, and I'm looking at the 5 books that I published mm-hmm. myself. And I go around to people at work, and I'm like, hey, you know, have you published a book? No. And everyone around you probably hasn't published a book, but yet it's so easy to go ahead and do it these days, to do that self-publishing mm-hmm. route. And yet it's so difficult at the same time because you're taking on all that risk.
Correct.
How was that first book that first book of poetry that you published on Amazon?
How was it doing?
How was the process for you?
Well, I went on to CreateSpace, which is a self-publishing platform. I uploaded the file, and they gave you options for covers, and I'm not a particularly visual person. So that was a learning process in and of itself, trying to decide how you want it to look and the layout of the pieces in the book. I think that took me, I don't know how many hours it took me, but it took me at least a month to do it all. And then, when you hit that publish button, they're going to send you copies of your book for you to approve of. And then they'll put it on Amazon for you. Mm-hmm. And of course and if it sells, they of course get a percentage and you get the rest.
So, you know, being somebody that's not technically savvy, being Correct. Somebody that's not a publisher per se, or has experience in the publishing realm, kind of easy to put that stuff together. Just pretty much, you know, if you can upload a file and you know, put string two thoughts together, you can probably do this.
Yeah, absolutely. People do it all the time. Mm-hmm. People do, you know, every day. I there's a guy I follow on Facebook, and I've read some of his works. A fellow named Chuck Tingle. He puts out a new book, quotation marks. They're only about 5,000 words long. But he puts one out, like, you know, every other week. I know of established authors who have been in traditional publishing for ages who have just decided to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. And traditional publishing, yeah, if you want to do that, go right ahead. But you won't be guaranteed creative freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I think self-publishing is taking off in such a big way, because it is creative freedom. There are no gatekeepers, mm-hmm. you know, which can be a good or a bad thing, because, you know, with self-publishing, there's also a lot of crap out there. But
hence why I have 5 books of poetry out there.
but you are completely free to do that. And you don't have anybody else saying, oh, well, you can't write that. Oh, you can't say this. Oh, you can't do that. But when you're doing it on your own, you absolutely can.
Excellent.
And it's just up to everybody else if they want to read it.
All right. And folks, we can't wait to see when you get that 5th novel written and published. We definitely want to come back and let us know about that. And I just want to encourage you, knock that bad boy out. I know you got work. I know you got a kid, but you ain't got twins. So you've got no excuse. Knock that book out. Make it
happen. This is true.
All right. So, Michael, are you ready for the Satanic 7 questions?
Wait on me.
All right. Have you sacrificed any virgins in preparation for this?
Well, since I don't know any virgins.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they're around you, they're probably not a virgin then, right?
Hey, you guys got to be what a guy's got to be.
There you go. There you go. Okay, here we go. I know you've been prepping for this. I know you've been drinking the blood of a goat, so let's get this knocked out for you. Question number one, what is the question you're always asked that you dislike, and why do you hate that question?
Oh, it was about art in general, or my life, or what?
Yes. Yes to all of the above.
Oh, well, what's it about?
And why do you hate that question?
Because most of the time I don't know what it's about. Okay. I mean, really. I mean, you sit down to write a poem. Yeah, you dedicate your time to sit down to write something, and you don't know what you're writing until it's finished. And then you look back on it and you either say, okay, let's go with this one, or you throw it away. And that's the other thing, is that you have to be willing to risk to do bad stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and not get down on yourself and not just give up your dream.
Because sometimes the audience is going to think that bad stuff is fantastic, i.e. tornadoes and sharks.
Sharknado.
Correct. I want to see the guy who, you know, thought that shit up and said, oh, fuck it. You know, sharks, tornadoes, make that happen. It's a horrible idea.
But look at what's happened to it.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I'm going to give you that question. I'm going to say you got that question right. So right now you're 1-0. And folks, you know, folks that are keeping score at home, remember, I created these questions back in episode 1. I answered these questions. I got 3 right, 4 wrong. So we have had our first perfect score a couple episodes back. So maybe Mike can get the next perfect score. Just not to put too much pressure on you, but you know, there is a perfect score in the room here. So, and I'm not it. Okay. So you want to know right now. Next question is, what is the worst piece of advice that you followed, and what was the result?
Oh.
And if you say I gave you the advice, the question.
Oh. The ex-wife, when we were married, said, "Let's move in with my parents. Let's move in with her parents." On a more artistic level, artistic way, gosh, what do I say to that? Because the thing is that, you know, when someone is giving you some advice and you trust them, and hopefully the only people you're listening to advice from is someone you trust, there's a way that you could turn that to your advantage. The worst piece of advice I ever got, I don't really know, Kimo, because I don't tend to get bad advice. Because, like I said, the people who I listen to know who I am, and they know what I'm going to consider and what I'm not going to consider. And so, yeah, I listen to people I trust. And everyone, well, basically everyone I know is a creative person one way or the other. And most creative people don't want to horn in on your process. You know, because, well, first off, it's disrespectful. And second off, like I just said, everybody's got their own process as their own way of doing things. And their way won't necessarily be the same way, won't be your way, and vice versa. And so when people ask me for advice, I say, just follow what you're doing. Just keep at it and finish it. So, yeah.
All right. I'm going to give that one to you as wrong, because you had it at the beginning. You were like, my ex-wife said, let's move in with my folks. And if you would have left it there, you would have had that question right. But you pulled back. So I got to mark that one as wrong. I got to mark that one as wrong.
I'll accept that.
Okay. All right. You had it, dude. You had it. I was like, man, we're going to have another fucking perfect score. And you fucked it up. All right. All right. Maybe you can redeem yourself on this one. All right.
All right.
Question number 3. A and you know, stick with your gut on this, dude. You know, your first answer is always right, or usually right. If it's C, it's always right. All right.
Okay.
Question number three. What's the allure to being an artist? And do you live up to the myth of being an artist, or how do you perpetuate the myth?
Oh, geez. I don't pay attention to the myth. I don't know.
You don't? You pay no attention to the myth of being an artist?
No, of course not. Okay.
All right.
You know, artists are no different than anybody else. We have a thing that we're doing. This is everybody else's thing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't compare myself to, you know, a politician or a policeman or anything like that. You know, I can't, and I won't. So the myth of the artist, I mean, what really is that? Is it the Van Gogh going crazy and cutting off his ear, or you know Picasso with his 17 wives or whatever, you know, and just, or just being a horrible person, you know, or being some inveterate drunk like Bukowski or Hemingway? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the myth? That's the question, really.
Okay.
And yeah, so yeah, I mean, those people had something wrong with them, some sort of mentally ill. Some sort of mental illness that I don't know. I don't think that was just them. I don't think it was part of the art. That was just their own psychosis. That they were able to create things in spite of all that is monumental. We can see that in Van Gogh's work. But the myth of the artist, I mean, what is that? You know? So yeah, that's my answer.
Ben, you know what? I'm going to give you that plus a half point.
Ooh.
So you're at 2.5.
Very good.
2.5 out of 3 questions. Not bad at all. You might get a perfect out of this. We'll see. This one is going to be a really tough one though for you. I think you're going to get this one wrong. I don't think there's a way you can get this one right. But we're gonna see what we can do. All right. Question number 4. If you throw yourself at the ground and miss, what are you doing and how do you continue to accomplish the seemingly impossible task?
Well, you're flying. And if you want to keep flying, don't look down.
That's your answer.
Yeah.
Done and done. Bing, 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 bing.
It's in the book. And if no one knows what we're talking about Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide.
I thought we were talking about my first book of poetry.
Oh, that too.
Oh, there we go.
But, you know, you got to credit the man.
Absolutely. That's where I got it. Perfect. You got that one right. So you're at 3.5 points right now. Fantastic, man. This is great. All right. Question number five. Are there people you don't tell that you're an artist? And is that wrong or bad that some artists conceal their talent?
Well, when I'm at work, I'm, you know, at my day job. I just do my job. And where I work, we don't really get too personal about things. If someone asks me, you know, if you know what else I do, I tell them straight up, I'm a writer. And then of course the questions will come like, oh, well, what's it about? And blah 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 blah, and they'll go into the myth of the artist as well. I live my life as an open book. You know, if someone wants to know something about me, I tell them. Well, and I try not to lie. if it's somebody who I particularly don't like, I'll just tell them to, you know, screw off, because they don't need to know.
Gotcha. Well, we're gonna go ahead and give you that one. You got it. All right, you're doing pretty good. You've only lost about a half a point here, and we're at question number 6. All right. Question number 6. What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? And if possible, show your work.
Well, do you mean African or European swallow?
Well, now whose show are you on? I'm Canadian, so I mean a Canadian swallow.
Oh, yeah.
That's the curveball. That's the
You were gonna
say African or European, like most people do. Yeah.
Of course.
Canadian swallow.
I got Canada had swallows. Such a strange people.
So, do you know the airspeed velocity of an unladen Canadian swallow?
Oh, man. Chemo, you're just going to have to knock a point off.
Okay. All right. He's not even going to attempt it, folks. He's not even going to attempt it. Not even going to show his work on this one. He's just going to say, you know what? Screw you, Chemo. There's no such thing as fucking Canadian swallows because Canadians don't swallow.
Oh!
All right.
Nice. I explained so much.
You know what? I'm giving myself a half point for that one.
Well deserved. Well deserved.
All right. Here's your last question. Now, this is the biggie. All right. This is for all the Gonzagas, whatever the hell a Gonzaga is. If money were no object and if time were no concern and resources were unlimited, what project would you attempt? That's the first part. Second part is, with all these negative factors being eliminated, would you allow this to be the only work that you were ever known by? So what's the project? And is this the only project you were ever known by? Go.
Oh, golly. Oh.
We don't fuck around here on Chemo's Den of Iniquity.
I see that. I'm very impressed. I'm very, very impressed. It would have to be... it would have to be a play that I've been working on for a long time now. That for various reasons, it's just not coming together. It takes place in the Bardo, which is the I guess you want to just say call it the Buddhist afterlife. Mm-hmm. And it's this character who's just died and he doesn't know that he's dead. But slowly but surely he's transitioning to his next incarnation. And I've been working on that for a long time. And I think that if I was completely unencumbered and had no problem with resources, I would spend my time with that. And even if that was the only thing that I would be known for, I would be proud of it. Because it's for various reasons, for various adventures in my life, it's that kind of thing is important to me. And I've had people ask me to write it. My mother asked me to write it just before she passed away. Because she knew I'd been working on it, and she knew the story, and but that would be the one. When I first started writing a book or a novel, I did it because I wanted to see if I was capable of it. And that was a very sharp learning curve. But I've always been a playwright at heart, and that's what I would do. That's the one. That would be, I would like to consider that my Hamlet.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Do you just want to write the play, or do you want to see it produced?
All of it.
Oh, so you want the whole kit and caboodle?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Just want to make sure. Yeah. Because when we hear from you next in season number 2, we're going to put it on the podcast.
Oh, my.
Yes. So you've got some work to do.
Clearly. I've got to try out the notes.
I've got some actors to contact. Promotion to do. We got this covered here.
Well, I have always wanted to write a radio play.
Well, Well, there you go. Done and done. Right. We're going to make your dream come true. By the way, you got that question correct. So you ended up today at 5.5 questions correct. So 5.5 out of 7. Not too shabby, my friend. Not too shabby at all.
This is a feather in my cap.
There you go. It's just truly another thing that you can put on your CV, your resume, throw it on your artist biography page. I got 5.5 questions right on Chemo's Den of Iniquity. Screw you. You ain't even been on the show yet.
There you go.
And you can use that direct quote from me. I'm giving that to you. It's yours.
Thank you. I will put that in my author's note.
Fantastic. Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure here having you on Chemo's Den of Iniquity. We're very privileged to have you here. You've been a collaborator with me for a number of years on various and sundry projects. Previously on Chemo's Den of Iniquity, we did multiple voiceovers, a lot of improv. And so I definitely want to thank you for all that work. And I'd like to have you, leave us with a final thought on art, on consuming more than we create for our audience. So if you could leave us with a final note on that theme, I would appreciate it.
If you're going to do it, if you're going to make art part of your life, then make it part of your life. Make it as essential to you as your job or your family or your friends. And definitely create more than you consume. If you're bored sitting in front of a TV, turn the TV off and go do your art. if you're sitting in a bad movie, don't waste your time on a bad movie. Go home, do your work. None of us know how long we have left. And if you want to create something, then you have to do it. Don't waste time.
Excellent.
Don't waste time or yourself.
Excellent words. Excellent advice there, folks. Folks, just get out there and create that art. You're sitting there watching TV. You're looking at something on the internet. You got the Netflix on. And if you think you can do it better, then do it. By all means, get out there and fucking do it. You're reading a book. You're like, hey, I could write that. Then go do it. If you're reading some of my poetry books and you go, I can do better than that, by all means, I challenge you. Go ahead, do it. I'll even show you how to do it. Not a problem. All right. Well, Michael, again, thank you so much for being on the show here.
Pleasure was mine.
Excellent. Folks, go look up Mike Finley. Like you said, he's on Amazon. Go look up his book. Look out for some more novels coming from him. And look out second season. We're going to have one of his plays produced right here on Chemo's Den of Iniquity. Thank you very much, and see you all in 2 weeks.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Create Art Podcast. KDOI rebroadcast. That was a really fun episode to do way back when I had the old podcast. I hope you got something out of it. I know novel writing can be kind of intimidating when people look at novels and they see, 400, 500, 900 page novels. You can write a novel if you take your time, listen to a lot of the things that Mike was saying, and just go out there and give it a shot for yourself. It's a very rewarding process. I do it myself once a year during the National Novel Writing Month. Now, if you got something out of this episode, I'd ask that you go ahead and share it with a friend. And you can email me, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. You can also go to the website, see the poetry, the novels, the paintings that I have up there. All the projects are up there as well as all the merchandise that you can go ahead and purchase to support the show, createartpodcast.com. If you'd like to be on the show, go ahead and shoot me out an email. Or if you have ideas of what you'd like to hear on the show, again, shoot the email, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. Again, I want to thank you so much for your listening to this podcast. I want to thank Mike Findlay for his interview. And as I like to say at the end of every show, tame your inner critic, create more than you consume. Now go out there and make some art for somebody you love, yourself. We'll see you next time.